You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hello, welcome along to the latest Today's Wills and Probate podcast. Today I'm chatting with Dan Temple. Dan is the director and lead facilitator of Cobalt Human Solutions. And the topic of conversation today is how we can create effective teams and unify teams and work better together as an organization. I think it's probably fair, isn't it, Dan?
I think that's great. We'll probably take it off. I'll take it off in tangent, I do.
So it's great to have you on the podcast. First of all, tell me a little bit about yourself and Cobalt Human Solutions. What's it all about?
So after spending 5 years working in industry in a cast iron foundry and becoming a leader, trainer, manager within there, at the age of 24, you learn very quickly when you're teaching 41 plus year old gentlemen in a blue collar industry about leadership. I had this inkling in the back of my mind that I wanted to join the Air Force, and I had done for a number of years. So I applied, went through the 3-day selection process for officer and aircrew, and I was selected to start training in 2004. And I did, and I spent nearly 20 years in, over 10 years of which operating Chinook helicopters all over the world, massing 3,000 hours, including multiple tours of Afghanistan. 2017, I moved to Cranwell and I was invited to teach people to be facilitators in the field of human factors. So the idea is we train the trainer. So we train people to then be trainers that go off and train 250,000 people across defence. Thoroughly enjoyed it, but towards the back end of that, I realised that my mental health was starting to degrade, and it actually led to me being discharged from the Air Force in July last year. But in the background, I was doing some study and I also started up Cobalt in September 2020 with a view to taking that when I left the Air Force, which came a bit quicker than I'd anticipated, really. So I hit the ground running really with Cobalt in the September last year, having taken 7 weeks off to spend time with the family. And Cobalt came about, the name Human Solutions is exactly that. I do believe that humans are the solution. We talk about human error and humans making mistakes and problems, and yeah, but actually I do believe that it's the environment that we operate in, that the cause of the problems, effectively, they're what we're seeing are the symptoms of the problems. And I think working with the humans within the team to find out, get the team to come up with the solutions to the challenges. And Cobalt itself, the name, was having lunch with my wife. We were chatting and I looked at the periodic table. Number 27 on the periodic table is Cobalt, having served 10 years, 1 month on 27 Squadron. And I knew Cobalt as a metal because of my background in metallurgy within the foundry. So Cobalt was only one of three magnetic elements, iron, nickel and cobalt. So it brings them together, brings things together. It's a catalyst. It's used in nuclear. So it's a catalyst for driving change. It's infinitely recyclable. And under the right conditions, it will perform to the highest standards and outperform other elements. So when you tie all that in, that just to me, that stands out as a human being. So over lunch, Cobalt Human Solutions was born.
I'm not sure that an awful lot of people have put that much thought into the name of their business, Dan, but I rather like it. There's a huge amount of conversation happening in legal at the moment around technology, and it's really interesting to hear you talk about human solutions. What's written largely is that there's either this tech route or there's this human route, and we have to kind of find a way for the two to work together. Is that something that you kind of recognize as a challenge?
Yeah, hugely. There's almost a fear of like tech is going to take over the world and we're going to end up with a Skynet Terminator scenario in a few years' time, because if we don't treat the robots right, I mean, my kids still say please and thank you to Alexa, which I'm very happy with because they've got their manners, but it's just in case they say just in case the robots take over. But I think that the integration piece, one of our strap lines for the company is integration for performance. And it's understanding how we as humans integrate with the equipment, with the processes, with our environment and with other human beings. And that tech piece, I mean, AI is not actually artificial intelligence. It's augmented effectively. And people are going to shoot me down for that. That's my opinion, because when you look at ChatGPT, all that's doing is all the stuff that anyone's ever done is read and researched and studied back from the days of microfiche to the advent of the internet, but doing it multiple speeds quicker. So it's not doing anything new. It's not able to cognitively process and emotively make a decision. It's just collating all the information that's already out there at a quicker rate. And yeah, there's efficiency, but efficiency doesn't always correlate to effectiveness. And at the end of the day, like a sausage, if you put rubbish meat into it, you get rubbish meat out, you get rubbish sausage at the end of it. So in that sort of analogy, there is a huge opportunity with AI, but I think we just need to be not so scared of it and utilize it and embrace of what it is. But at the end of the day, if the humans aren't in the right environment, in the right frame of mind, the right mindset, they're not going to utilize the equipment or technology effectively.
You mentioned the fact that you were working on a Chinook helicopter. I guess the natural line of questioning is, what qualifies you to be doing what you're doing? How do you work with organizations, and what lessons do you bring from the RAF into your work now?
One of the biggest lessons is the teamwork. And we talked about how to create as a functioning, high performing team and all the good stuff. And it's a 4-person crew. We have 2 pilots, 2 crewmen in the aircraft. One of our biggest roles was MERT, medical emergency response. So we were extracting casualties from the battlefield. And now, whether it's British forces, coalition forces, Estonians, Danish, Afghan soldiers, Taliban, and Afghan civilians, it made no difference. We would go in and get them as best we could, regardless of their injury. So to do that, as part of our 4-person crew and team, we had to transport 4 medical personnel and 4 force protection in a 100-foot flying death green banana at about 180 miles an hour, 50 feet from the ground, to the point where you're about probably 40, 50 miles an hour, an absolute sitting target. So in that threat environment, you've got to have absolute trust and accountability and integrity with each other. So when I look at teams, I always look at the aim. So I look at the aims, roles, responsibilities, the processes, procedures, and then the people itself. The aim is what we're doing. We're all intent. So our intent in that situation, and it doesn't have to just be getting a casualty out of the battlefield. It could be moving troops around. It could be inserting them for an operation in the morning. It could be resupplying water and food and ammunition, because in the height of the fighting season, it was quite challenging and they couldn't drive anywhere because of the IED threat. Or it could be UK-based, national standby, getting a casualty from somewhere in Liverpool, take them to Newcastle or somewhere else. The aim, what is the overall objective? What is the vision, if you like? So make sure everyone's aligned to that. And then you look at the roles and responsibilities. Each person on that crew within a team know what they're doing or they should do. And if they don't, the question is, why not? We very often think, everyone happy with that? We all nod, go, yeah, happy with that. We walk out of there and go, I've no idea what I'm doing. You speak to the other, your oppo, and you're like, what are we supposed to be doing? Can you just clarify? Because I'm completely confused. But nobody wants to ask the question. Nobody wants to look like the idiot in the room. Say, well, sorry, I don't understand. Because if the environment is such that people are fearful of asking that question. And then that comes down to the process and procedures. Again, the training, well, you've been trained in this. Was the training effective? So understanding that. The British military are known for being the best training in the world, provide training all over the world. And I was fortunate enough to be train the trainer. So I would train people to train other people. That has to be key. You have to be engaged. A lot of those people say, well, it's just common sense. Well, if it was, it would be common, but it's not. So then you look at the processes. Are the processes in place? If they're not, then that needs changing. If they are they fit for purpose and are they correct? And are they working effectively? Right down to the last bit of the people. If you don't get on with each other, and let's be honest, not everyone plays well together, but you have to be able to put that aside. But also understand why. Have those difficult conversations. People are fearful of it. What are we so scared of? Is it our status? David Rock talked about the SCARF model. There's 4 elements to why people may fear have that difficult conversation. So taking that from that very close environment, that close knit, where the outcome could be catastrophic, applying those that same theory into business translates really well, because you've got to have the accountability and integrity to enable trust, to enable people to work effectively as a team, to have those conversations. And after a few years of doing that, I thought, let's have these conversations. And then going into the world of human factors, taking that from safety critical environments, and the same. You look at all the major disasters of anything that's ever happened in the world, not the natural one, excuse me, but the man-made, you look at Lockerbie, sort of Piper Alpha, Chernobyl, Bhopal, any rail incident. Look at Smiler, Alton Towers not so long ago. These things happen. But invariably, it's the environment and the culture of the workplace. And it's the human interaction with all of that that sets that.
So you've outlined a number of different issues, You've all talked about culture, and I'm sure we'll talk about culture in a little bit of detail shortly. But what are the most common issues that you see that prevent effective teams?
People talk about the buzzword. Everyone talks about latest buzzwords, a psychological safety, something that's been around for decades, but it's just got a name on it. That being open and honest. If we can't openly, appropriately challenge, so you're my boss, and you tell us a plan, and I say, okay, fine, yeah, agree with it, go along with it. When you walk out of there, and the rest of us in the team were like, that's the worst idea we've ever heard. But if we're fearful of challenging you, and again, like, actually, David, we don't think that's the great best idea, or have you considered this? Yes, I have, but it's my way or the highway. That environment. So that is the biggest, probably the biggest challenge we see, that people see leadership as a command or management pillar, whereas actually leadership is not top down, it's up and it's across. What is the one problem? What's the most common? There's so many, to be honest. The accountability is probably the big one. The accountability that people confuse with culpability. They're fearful of getting something wrong. If a project goes wrong that I'm responsible for, I'm responsible for it. I've got to own up and say, do you know what? That's on my watch. Whether it's my fault or not, we can discuss till the cows come home and people can point the finger. But I'm responsible for it, and I'm responsible, right, what's happened? How can we change this round, and how can we move forward with it? But too often in organisations, and this is something I see all the time, is that people are fearful of being accountable. They don't want to hold themselves to account because they might be seen as not being able to do the job or ineffective, and also fearful that they'll be held culpable, held to blame. An example of that would be the Croydon train crash a number of years ago, where 7 people unfortunately lost their lives, where the train driver went around the corner too fast. They'd fell asleep. And the culture at the time was, right, blame. And blame is such a delicious emotion. Professor James Reason said it. It feeds that emotion that we think, right, actually, this is going to go, we blame somebody, that's it, it's fixed the problem. Well, unfortunately, in that scenario, the driver, what led up to that? You've heard of the five whys? I can't remember if we talked about it before. When you ask something why, so why did that happen? Then why don't you go back further? So the driver at the time, the equipment that he was using was failing. He was exhausted because the environment he was operating, he was working additional hours because the culture was such that people were off sick quite a lot. He was also exhausted because of mental health, because he was fearful of actually opening up saying, do you know what? There's problems with this equipment, the problems with the kit. There's a lot more to into it. And again, unfortunately, people only pay attention when people lose their lives. And that's why it's safety critical that gets a lot of the human factors understanding. But in business, you've got financial, you've got reputational. There's lots of things that can go wrong. But people don't want to be blamed for it. And they confuse that between that and accountability. So I think that's probably the biggest one, is that accountability within the leadership side of things.
So if we can drill into that a touch further, how do we create that culture of accountability rather than a culture of blame?
Yeah, so there's a thing called the just culture, where it's a fair and open, honest culture, whereby we can be open and honest. Say, you know, I've made a mistake. When something happens, when things go wrong, that's normally a symptom of something further. We talk about human error. Oh, human error, human made a mistake. Why did they make the mistake? Let's go further back into that. So how do you create that? It has to be a just culture whereby people can openly, honest, talk about the things that either are going wrong, have gone wrong, or more importantly, have the potential to go wrong, because it's about being proactive rather than reactive.
This is root cause analysis, isn't it? Just trying to look at it.
Yeah, so when post-event, you have the root cause analysis. So, right, what happened in that event? Why did it go bad and go five ways? And there'll be many influencing factors and contributing factors. Gary Klein talks about a pre-mortem. So rather than talking about what, if you've got a big project, what are the things that could go wrong? Well, actually, this is the project. This is what we're going to do. Now, imagine we've done the project and it went wrong. So why did it go wrong? And it's a different mindset, because you talk hypothetically. Well, this could go on. I mean, a meteor could come out from the sky. I'm looking at that and crash into it. Yeah, okay, let's be serious. But when you do a pre-mortem, you sit, what actually went wrong? And until you address that and come up with those thoughts, but until you've got that environment where people can be open and honest and talk about it, you're never going to get that. There was a boss many years ago, sort of 20 years ago, and he walked into the boardroom. And he said, right, we're going to change our marketing strategy. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do this, this, and this. Who's got any questions? And the people around the room like, ah, nope. They didn't say a word. Everyone happy? Yep. Nobody said a word. It walked out. And he walked back in about 2 seconds later. He said, "Why the hell didn't you challenge me?" He said, "That if we didn't mind ahead with that, that'd cripple our company." He said, "Get out." And he said, "Every time I come up with an idea, challenge me. If we don't have that appropriate challenge, we will never innovate and grow. And effectively, you could end up crashing and dying."
You and I have talked in the past about organizations thinking that they're effective when they're not. What do you mean by that? How can you explain that? What examples can you give?
This expression we use, workers seen versus workers done. So at boardroom level, everything's going on. Nobody comes to us with complaints. Everything's fine. Everyone's working. Everyone's happy. At a tactical level, at a delivery level, on a shop floor level, if you like, people are leaving. People are fragged. They're broken. The sickness rate, the staff turnover. But that doesn't translate. And or if it does, it doesn't translate as to why. So what we see versus what is actually happening. And there's another expression, I've got a little cliche, it's just like, do you see what you believe or do you believe what you see? So our bias tells us everything's okay. 2006 in the Air Force, we lost a Nimrod. It crashed, killing 14 people on board. It was a walk-on-by culture that had been happening for a number of years. There were problems with the aircraft. It had been leaking fuel. It was known. Every time it got airborne, there was usually something wrong with it. The government at the time were looking to replace it. But that had been delayed because of safety cases. There had been a safety case put in for it. That had been delayed again. But at senior levels, there was an acceptance of, oh, it'll be okay, because nothing had gone wrong. You know the old expression, we've always done it this way and it's always worked. Well, just because nothing's gone wrong that we've seen, how many times have we made a mistake? And the first thing we do is check our six. Quick, who saw us? We got away with it. Right, let's bury that. Let's move on. And that's an example. Go back to 2006. Sir Charles Haddon Cave, a respected QC, KC as he is now, he said in his damning report, 700 pages plus, he said it was a failure in leadership, priorities and culture. And that took 14 lives for the Air Force and Defence Aviation to learn that we need to stop sweeping under the carpet. Did it stop? No, I'll put it out there. But it certainly made a difference.
So if we think a little bit, and you don't have to give away all your trade secrets here, Dan, but if we think a little bit about your own methodology, you know, taking this into a business, taking this into a law firm, for example, what does that look like? Where do you start? How do you get people to see whether they're working effectively or not? And then what's the process thereafter to really get under the skin of the organization?
The first step is usually just an invite to come in. It's like coach. I don't know if you ever had a coach before. People think of coaching being when they're failing at something. So we say, well, we need to get a coach in. Like, I want to have a personal coach. Well, sports stars, even the very successful ones, get it because they're good. And then they continue with the coaching. Same within business. It's not recognizing that something's gone wrong. It's recognizing we want to get better. How can we get better? So invite somebody in. So we start what's called a thematic analysis. Basically come in. I facilitate an open conversation, whether we take senior leadership, management, and then the workforce, if you like, the team separately, we do it together, either or. We have open conversations. I'll facilitate that. An objective facilitator, maybe one of the team, will come in and they can ask those questions. They can appropriately challenge and say, so just tell me what's your thought process behind that, as opposed to why, because it can get people's backs up. Listening to what's being said. So we come in, spend a day or half a day, have that conversation with groups of people. Off the back of that, pull a report together and then feed that in. And then from there, usually people are very honest and open. I think on one occasion where we've had a room full of people that just didn't want to talk. After a while, they did. They got talking. It took a little while. But people will openly talk. Our brain has got one job. It keeps alive. It's defensive mode all the time. So naturally, we will talk about what we see as challenges or problems. And in the right environment, you can start to open those up. And that's what we do. We create that environment within the workspace over the course of a day or two. Have the create environment, and then we have those conversations after and say, right, these are the big things that are highlighting. So let's look at these. And then these are very often symptoms. So then we look at identifying the causal factors. What's actually driving these problems? If they're a problem in the past, has it something that's happened regularly, or is it something that could lead to something negative or has the potential to lead to a negative outcome? So I'm working in construction at the moment as well as legal. And we talked about compliance. There are so many rules with health and safety. And in the legal sector, you've got so many rules that people have to abide by, and they change regularly. And people are almost using that as an excuse in places I've seen. where they're just, oh yeah, but the rules are so complex, the rules are so complicated. There's a difference between the two. A jumbo jet is complicated, mayonnaise is complex. But the fact is that people use excuses for not doing stuff. And in that open environment, that discussion where people can have, that we will sit down with people and say, right, how do we move forward? But it's got to be businesses and owners and directors, if you like, and senior staff wanting to say, yeah, let's look, let's open that box, rather than keeping it nailed shut, because everything's okay, we're still making money, nobody's died, we're all fine. Staff turnover, oh yeah, it's a woke generation, yeah, these youngers, they don't like hard work. Well, even when you thrash people all day, every day, that's not a problem with the people, that's a problem with the environment and the work and the business itself. That's just my opinion.
If the listeners are anything like me, Dan, they're intrigued by your analysis of mayonnaise and an aeroplane. I'm not sure I've ever heard the two conflated. What do you mean by that?
So that was a gentleman called Stephen Carver, who lectures at Cranfield University. And if you ever hear him speak or get the chance to, go and see him. He gets invited to NASA very often, and he goes and tells them how rubbish they are and why they killed their astronauts on a regular basis. And they love his talk so much. And he came up with the expression. And what he means by that is something's complicated like a jumbo jet. When you put things together, take them apart, put them together, take them apart, they stay the same. Okay, that nothing changes within. Whereas something's complex is when you put it together, the constituent parts change. So like mayonnaise. So you can take a jumbo jet apart, but if you ever try taking mayonnaise apart, so good luck with that one. So the human being is very complex. We're not complicated because we have emotions. These things change the makeup of how we respond and react. Heraclitus was the philosopher that said that the only constant in this world is change. But he also says no man steps in the river twice. And what does he mean by that is the fact that when you put your foot in the river and take it out, whether it's 3 seconds, 3 days or 3 years later, the river's changed and so have you. So that's what we mean by complex. And when you put the human being into any system or process, it makes it complex. So going right back down to the start, why humans are the solutions. Because an automated system will work in a very basic process format, such as production. Look at Henry Ford, look at back at the turn of the 20th century. As soon as you take it out of that and start making it a little bit more real, if you like, in real world and the rate of change that we have, you put the human into the system. And even in the system, even a very complicated system is going to fail. Look at Toyota. Look at the, ever heard of the Andon cord? So in Toyota in the 60s, they had a, at the time, the culture was nobody stopped the production line because of fear, because you don't stop that. But actually what they did, they changed it because people could see things were happening, but people too fearful to say something. So they brought in the Andon cord where they pulled the cord. If somebody could see something that was going to happen, they pulled the cord. And the first thing that the supervisor went across to him on the line was said to him was, thank you and well done for pulling the cord and stopping it. And they say, right, what can we do? What do you see happening? What can we do to fix it, to stop it going wrong? Changing that culture, change that environment is what turned Toyota into a leading car manufacturer in the world. Taking that culture, having that open, honest, being able to do something like that, that's what I mean by complex and complicated.
And if we are to sum up this podcast in a bit of a nutshell, and this is a huge area to talk about inside a 25 to 30 minute podcast, Dan, but if we were to sum this up, that's the piece that you're really sort of focusing on here, is that cultural bit, the making sure that there's a accountability rather than blame, yeah, and accounting for the fact that at the end of the day, we're human.
Yeah, the four pillars I talk about is, for the successful team, you've got to have the aim. Everybody's got to be bought into the vision. They've got to understand what they're trying to do, and they've got to trust and believe in it. Everyone needs to know their roles and responsibilities. They need to know what they're doing, who's actionable for what, who's accountable. Are the processes and procedures in place and are they fit for purpose? And have we got the right people in the teams as well? Have we got the right people in the right places? You can go through all the personality profiles and stuff and all those, like, agree with some, agree with others. I'm qualified in quite a few of them. But it's not one thing. It's a big oversight of everything together, putting it together. You've got to have that bind at all levels and all the different pillars. And what we do at Cobalt is we help companies and businesses align those four elements together, work them independently, but also they're interdependent as well. They are incongruent, because otherwise you just end up chasing tail. It might look good on the outside, but don't let the outcome bias flavour your view.
They're complex rather than complicated.
They are that. Yes.
Dan, it's been great to have you on the podcast. We can't do this justice, as I say, in half an hour, but it's been fantastic to have some insight and for you to share some of your knowledge and some of your anecdotes as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, David. It's been an absolute pleasure.
The Today's Wills and Probate podcast is available on your preferred podcast provider. It's also available on todayswillsandprobate.co.uk. My thanks to Dan. Thank you, as ever, for listening. And we'll see you again soon.
You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.